Welcome to the Round 17, your Supercoach Coach podcast. I'm, of course, your host, Marcus, and we're joined this week by special guest, Tom from FFC, and, of course, our regular podcaster, Mark. So say hello, guys.
G'day.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
We'll just start off as per usual by letting you guys know how we went on the weekend. So we'll start with Tom, who will give you a brief rundown with how he's gone so far this season.
Been doing decently this season. I've actually surprised myself somewhat with my results. I currently sit 693rd. I've had somewhat of an inconsistent season. I had a week where I managed to rank 63rd for the week. That was probably around a month ago now, and that week sort of has moved me along really nicely through the rankings. I think I was at 8,000 at that stage and sort of moved my way down into the top 1,000. And yeah, I've made some pretty solid trades. This week I managed 2,268 with Gary Ablett as captain, so that was the real downside for me that week. But it was enough to move me into the top 1,000 and looking all right from there, I think.
Very nice, Tom. I scored 24-16. Finally, not having Ablett came good. I think 900 of the top 1,000 had Ablett last week, and pretty much most of them would have had him captain. So obviously shot me up a lot. I went up 557 spots to 201st. I still got a stack of trades in hand, so I'm pretty confident of finishing in the double digits, but of course, anything can happen in Supercoach, so keeping my fingers crossed still. Mark, how'd you go?
Yeah, we'll definitely be following you and supporting you through the rest of the year, Marcus. I scored 21.06, which is a lot less than both of you two, but also rose in the ranking, so I was pretty happy. Still sitting about 2,500. I've been between 2,500 and 3,000 for like 10 weeks now after a really strong start, so just can't get any momentum happening. Hopefully things change around this week. I don't have too many Hawks in my side with Franklin the only Hawks premium, so hopefully I can have a good week.
Well, we're going to talk about a few topics this week. Obviously going to look at Gary Ablett and a few options if you're thinking about trading him, and we're going to take a look at Zach Smith as well, who a lot of people have at R2 at the moment due to the Sanderlin's issue and how they use him for a cash downgrade. So we'll look at options there, and of course, we'll be going through it positionally as we have been doing for the last few weeks. So we'll start off with a couple of guys who have been on the buy this last week. And the first guy is Graham Johncock from Adelaide. He's priced at $452,000. So that's actually a fair amount of money for a defender at the moment. But he has a really good run coming out. And even though he started the season poorly, he's really brought together some pretty strong scores over the last few rounds. He's probably averaging about 100, 105 over the last 8 rounds, which is really strong from a defender, obviously. He has Essendon, St Kilda, Port Adelaide, Brisbane, Geelong, Gold Coast, Richmond and West Coast for his remaining rounds, and obviously the pretty good opposition there for Supercoach scoring. So how do you guys feel about the Johncock pick?
Not a huge fan of him personally. I've just never had him in my Supercoach team. I know he's been fantasy relevant before and had some really good output, but just never picked him up before. Don't really like picking someone from such a low side. I think if you're going to pick him, you'd be hoping for a bit more improvement out of Adelaide. Tom, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on where your side sits. I think if you did want to bring him in, he's got a fair few scores in the last 3 weeks or 4-5 weeks even that have really boosted his average: 124, 131, 117, and then 89 and 99. So I mean, he's playing well. He's in good form. But I mean, do you really need to spend that amount of money? I think is the question. I certainly don't feel that I need to make any decision on him at this stage, and I don't think. I mean, unless you're struggling and you feel that you need that to spend that amount of money to get what you think could be a continuance of his form, then you'd be doing that. But yeah, otherwise, I'm not really sure if we'll be able to keep it up.
Yeah, the reason I bring him up is because obviously he's buy free and he's got a pretty good run, and I think he's pretty capable of averaging 100 to 105, which is pretty difficult to find in a defender, that type of scoring potential. When you take out buy clashes, I think pretty much most people have six premiums that average, you know, can average that 95 to 105, but most have, you know, a D7 that's pretty weak in scoring. So if you're looking to take it up a notch, that maybe he would be a decent option. But obviously, we don't have many fans of this pick. So we'll go over to Greg Broughton, who was also on the buy is obviously has a buy free run from here. He's priced a bit cheaper at 421,000. But the biggest draw about Broughton going forward is that due to the injuries that Fremantle have sustained, that he's actually been playing a lot more midfield time. So this is reflected in a huge boost in his scoring. We know in his first two seasons in the AFL, he's averaged 95, which is particularly good. 145 and 122 are his last two scores. But the biggest concern, as with most Fremantle players, is that they do have a really tough run home. They've got Sydney, West Coast, Hawthorn, St Kilda, Carlton, North Melbourne, Collingwood and Western Bulldogs. Now, hearing that, I don't think you'd be very confident in picking him up, but he has scored really well in, Fremantle haven't been the best performing side the last 2 years, and he has still managed a good score at a young age, so he's a viable option. What do you guys think?
I've been a huge fan of Broughton's playing through that midfield, not just from a fantasy sense, but the fact that he's just a great user of the footy. Even if he's playing in that back line, he's able to distribute the ball very well. And while he was in that form slump for the beginning of the year, or form slump in some people's eyes, fantasy-wise, he was definitely still putting up decent scores because he was able to use the footy well. And I think it really depends also on the personnel that Fremantle have in their side. If they do lose a few defenders to injury, I mean, obviously having guys like Hayden available for selection, Silvani available for selection, Mzungu playing a bit more down back, that really helps him because they know that he uses the footy well and they will put him there if they have that depth. But without that depth, you're not going to see him there too often. And that's what we've really seen earlier this year. The injuries in the preseason, they really hurt him. And because he's such a good defender as well, it doesn't surprise me that Harvey's used him in that role. So, I mean, if you do, if you're looking at, out for someone like him with no more buys, definitely get on him. But you'd have to be wary of who they have in their squad and who they play week to week is an interesting prospect because he does match up very well on medium forwards.
Yeah, I don't think I've got too much more to add than what you guys have brought up. He has had two really good games in a row, but they were against Brisbane and the Suns. So easy games he's doing really well, whether he'll do so well in the tougher games to come. I think I'd take him ahead of John Cock at the moment. He's about 35K cheaper. Seems like a pretty solid pick for the rest of the year.
Now, the last guy I'm going to talk about in the back line isn't actually a premium, but he's a rookie who played a couple of games last year in the final series, and that's Andrew Hooper from the Western Bulldogs. He's in the back line, despite playing up forward, 110,000. His first two scores have been 59 and 66, but having watched his games, I can say fairly confidently that, you know, if he keeps this up, and it looks like he can, because a lot of his strengths as a player come from effort-based stuff rather than skill-based stuff. Considering his size, he's only 172 centimetres. He's got really great tackle pressure. I think the combination of Dalhouse and Hooper significantly beat Garlett and Betts, who, you know, are fairly rated small forwards. So I really like them. They're playing really good football at the moment. And Western Bulldogs do have their backs against the wall to make it into the top eight. So I do think they'll keep performing from here. They have won, I think, five of the last six games. So they're in good form. And if you're looking for a backline downgrade at this point of the season, there might not be too many of you who are still looking at that. But he certainly is a very good option.
Yeah, is this like a quirk of the system where because he played finals, his price actually didn't increase for this year? Still priced at 110,000. There's not many good rookies going to be available for the rest of the year. So if you see one that's played a couple of games in a row and scored all right, then and you really need to pick one up, then Hooper's probably going to be as good as anyone you come across.
Yeah, I think if you look at his scores, you know, they've been decent for a rookie. And, you know, like Mark said, if you are after a downgrade, then he could be your man. But I have queries whether he'll stay in the team. I'm curious to what you guys think. I mean, we've seen Liberatore drop out of the side. We've seen Wallace drop out of the side. Do you think is it the case of one bad game and he's gone scenario, do you think?
I think positionally is probably something to look at. If you look at the midfield depth that they have, obviously, It's a lot stronger than their current forward line depth. They just need... I don't like the Western Bulldogs generally as a team because I find that a lot of their players tend to be guys that just want to receive the ball, so a lot of outside players. And a player that can apply such tackle pressure in the Bulldogs forward line, which they're only able to achieve, I think, in 2008 when they were playing that really great attacking brand of football that they haven't been able to achieve since, that's really key. And Rodney Eade has... over the last 5 weeks, 6 weeks, where you know they've really improved their form, it's that he's finally switched on and realised that you know modern day football involves the forward press, and he's Dalhouse and Hooper really are really effective in Bulldogs being able to achieve that, because like I said, I don't feel that a lot of those blokes in that team are willing to lay the tackle for the team.
That's interesting that he's actually playing a very similar role to what Wallace was when Wallace was in the team. He was playing that defensive forward, and it looks like Hooper is actually going to do that a lot better than Wallace was doing. I don't think Wallace quite had the body strength or maybe even the speed that Hooper does to play that defensive forward role quite as well. So we'll move on to the midfield and the big issue of the weekend. Now, I've been away for a couple of weeks and sort of didn't really see what happened, but apparently there was a big thing happened with Ablett on the weekend. Do you want to explain that, someone?
Well, as a Geelong supporter, I know that Ablett tends to get pretty worried about his body. Obviously, he's a superb player, so you know that's warranted. But he didn't actually have any structural damage, but he went off after only scoring 19 Supercoach points, which is obviously pretty good. But I think he's facing fitness tests to get back against Richmond this Saturday. I think he's a fairly good chance, but obviously they're not going to take any chances. I think he's got bruising, so the medicos will check him out, and he's a chance to play this weekend, but he's going to drop fairly significantly in price, obviously, with a 19 in his price cycle. But having, you know, that having come after a 185 will obviously help negate that a bit.
Now you've got Ablett, Tom. What do you see happening? Yeah.
Well, I was interested by the injury because it didn't. There was a lot of speculation after the game that it could be, you know, some were saying a month at, I think it was best case scenario. And I don't think, obviously, we've seen the scans have revealed that he's not going to miss a lot of footy. Wouldn't surprise me to see him miss this week. You know, they want to be cautious with their star player, you know, get him on the park without that risk, I guess. But I see him in the next few weeks. He's able to come back. You'd think that he'd still be able to score relatively well. He's going to drop in price, and if you don't have him, it's a chance to pick him up. But, yeah, you guys have got very valid points. I mean, he's very wary about his body, and if he misses a week, that's the big decision. I mean, what do you actually do with him? If it's just a 1 week, you'd think most top coaches would hold him, but with trades in hand, it's always viable to try and get that leg up, and I think, you know, we're going to see that if he does miss 1 or even 2 weeks. It could draw out. Who knows?
I think that's going to be one of the difficult things, is we're not actually going to know how much footy he's going to miss.
Yeah, I think probably a lot of coaches that are doing particularly well don't seem to have that many trades left in hand. There are a fair few that do, but probably most will end up holding on to him. But I guess I'd probably see him at the most missing 1 week just because there's no structural damage, and he said he's a chance to play this weekend already. So... if he misses 1 week, then you get an extra week of premium scoring, and that might be worthwhile for you. So if you've got trades in hand and you can make money out of, you know, a G Ablett trade, maybe down to a Hodge or whatever, and make 60K out of it, and you can use that to your advantage, then maybe do that. But unless you're, you know, going to – that cash probably – you can use that cash to advantage, probably hold on to him because – as Tom mentioned, he's probably just going to return to pretty strong scoring once he gets back into the team.
I don't think you can gain too much from trading someone that's going to be out for 1 week, especially not someone that had such a high scoring ceiling. You'd want to, like, you'd have to have like Hodge in your midfield and be looking at a guaranteed donut as this week or something along those lines. I was wondering if you think you could actually make him captain this week if he is named.
I don't feel. I mean, if you did make him captain, you'd have to be quite sure of how he's going to play against Richmond. I mean, will he get the Jackson tag? I mean, he probably will, but if he's under the weather, then even if he's not able to, you know, go at full capacity, then it'd be risk, wouldn't it? With so many other good captain choices around, you know, guys like Pendlebury, you know, guys like Swan, plenty of other players to choose from. Murphy, you know, I wouldn't be going there personally, just at the will of avoiding risk.
You would have thought that if Gary Ablett plays, that he's absolutely 100%. I don't think that risk him playing even sore, like under any duress. So I'd say if he's actually playing, that I'd be pretty comfortable with giving it to him. But like you said, there's a risk, and there are plenty of good options. But if he was playing, and if I did have Ablett, I'd probably be willing to put it on. Having said that, we'll take a look at a few midfield options now that have been performing pretty well. The first guy we want to look at is Nick Dal Santo, who absolutely killed it on the weekend, scored 174. Now, that's pushed his average up to 117 that we know he's easily capable of doing. He's a hot topic on the forum so far this week. Obviously, buy free means that it becomes an even better option. How do you guys feel about Nick Dal Santo going forward? Do you think he's a player that you must have? Will he average, 125 and be a crucial player in the run home?
You go, Tom.
Yeah, he's averaged 130 the past 5 weeks. So that's, not including the bye, obviously, but that's a huge amount. And he's always going to have these patches in his season where he scores really well. He's a proven Supercoach performer. And this is going to happen. He's going to have those huge games, 170 plus on the weekend. I find him as an option I'd seriously consider. If Gary Ablett was out for, say, he did get the 4 weeks, I'd be seriously considering looking at Dal Santo just because of the fact that, he is a great user of the ball. He's actually relatively unique in terms of the top teams having him. If you look inside the top 1,000 teams, I can tell you that less than 200 have him. In fact, I think it's less than 150 actually have Dal Santo. So, if I was confident in his scoring going forward, he'd be a great point of difference for my side. And certainly anyone else who's looking at someone with no buys left, someone who's going to play every week and someone who's, if he gets the number one tag, which he seems to every now and then there's always that concern. But if you're confident in him being able to, continue his good form, then, yeah, I have no problems at all with picking him up. He's a great pick.
Yeah. Preseason, I was a big fan of Dal Santo when most people weren't, but now I'm seeming like I'm not a fan when most people are. I just kind of feel that he's likely to go on a big run, but it's not going to last more than a 5 or 6 week period before he has a couple of down games, and he's already done that 5 or 6 weeks already. So I think you're sort of paying full price for someone that is probably at the top of their price at the moment. I'm of the opinion that the Saints will continue to improve. I think that they will threaten the finals. Dal Santo will probably have a big role in that, but normally when he goes on a run like this, they chuck a pretty hard tag on him for the next couple of weeks, and I pretty much expect that to happen, and I think the tag this week at Etihad will go to him from Scott Selwood. So after that, I guess he's got Adelaide and then the Suns, but I don't expect him to continue to average 130.
Yeah, well, I do think he's a sort of yo-yo type player. He, in terms of his Supercoach scoring, that his big scores balance out his small scores, and he's, probably, I'd say, average 115 from here on out. So, just because there are 21 players on the park this year, that we've actually seen that there are a lot more premiums that are actually scoring 115 because the scoring pie is divided by a small amount of players actually on field at any one time. Unless he's going to average 125, I don't think that I'd be happy to pay $531,000 for him when there are so many options that I see are capable of averaging 115 going forward. But if you want to point a difference, as Tom said, then he's certainly a very good option. Now, another point...
Plenty of good coaches like Tom are suggesting Dal Santo is a really good option this week, so...
Another point of difference that you could pick up will be Joel Selwood. Obviously, he's missed the last 4 weeks, so his ownership numbers has dropped significantly. He's 517,000, and having had a 4 week break, can probably easily manage a 125 average to round out the season. He was in spectacular form before getting suspended, and Geelong still have a pretty easy run. They've got Brisbane, Richmond, Melbourne, Gold Coast, and Adelaide as their next 5 opponents, which it's definitely a tasty proposition.
Yeah, Selwood's another guy that you'd have to consider just because his early season form, like you said, Marcus, it's been absolutely sensational. You look at his early scores in the year. Besides the fact that his concussion in round one, he's had hundreds all over the park. Besides 2 scores in round 4 and 12 before his suspension, and you have to rate the way he plays footy. He's actually fairly unique as well. Just again to bring up the stats that I've got here, he's according to what I've got here, he's actually only in 77 of the top 1,000 teams. Now, I mean, if you are looking to get a leg up, he's another perfect candidate for that, because he's someone who's going to score well for the rest of the year. His run heading home is fantastic. I mean, he's got Brisbane, Richmond, Melbourne, Gold Coast, Adelaide, then the bye, which is something you have to be wary of when you're picking up someone of Selwood's calibre, and then just because he's going to be such an important player in anyone's team, and then, of course, you've got Sydney and Collingwood. So, yeah, someone I definitely rate. But it depends on how your side's faring so far and whether you can really afford to bring him in or use a trade.
I wonder whether you think that you should go Del Santo or Selwood here, Tom. I assume that Selwood personally is probably going to score more for the rest of the year, but because of the bye situation, does that mean that you should go Del Santo being bye free?
I think it does. One week out is definitely going to make a difference. And also, if you look at the other Geelong players, a lot of coaches may have guys like Chapman. Some of us may even have Bartel. You look Enright, someone I've got in my side. It's not as appealing to look ahead on that fixture and see that I'm going to be missing, you know, two to three, even four quality players in one round. So yeah, Del Santo for me.
Another guy we could bring into this argument is Dale Thomas, and I know you have him, Tom. He's only in 23,000 teams, which is fantastic, and I'm sure you'll mention his statistics in the top 1,000 soon. So I just want to mention his scores before I throw it over to you. 127, 151, 157, 108, 86, 121, and on the weekend, 146 before being subbed off in the third quarter. So he's going absolutely sensationally. And at 505,000, he's actually pretty cheap for his scoring ceiling and buy free as well. So
yeah, Dale Thomas is someone I've had only for 2 weeks now. I got his 121 and 146, so yeah, obviously a very nice trade, an upgrade in my midfield. And yeah, in terms of popularity, again, he's another guy that a lot of people have overlooked all year, because I'm not sure whether he gets he's overlooked because of the fact that you've got Swan and Pendlebury, and that basically rules him out because he's alone as a midfielder. But the fact that Collingwood have completed both of their buys means that he's an option for anyone just about. He only features in these stats that I've got here actually after round 15, sorry. So he's only, but after two buys nonetheless, he's only in one of the top 100 teams. And I don't suspect that's changed too much in the top 5,000, only 72 teams. So that might have moved up a little bit since, but you know, you'd have to call that unique numbers. And you know, just the way he runs so hard, he works so hard to get the footy, that's basically guaranteed to get him a good score on a Collingwood side that just dominates every week. I mean, what's not to like?
What other pies do you have in your midfield, Tom?
In my midfield, I'll just have a look. I've got Pendlebury, Boyd, Andrew Swallow, Gary Ablett, Swan and Thomas. So I'm actually fitting three Collingwood midfielders after I bring Thomas in after his round 14 bye.
And okay, it's probably not a bad thing from having the top side that's dominating teams like they did against North on the weekend to have three Collingwood midfielders in there. I know that in the old days, Supercoach theory was the ABC, the Ablett, Bartel and Corey theory, where you just had them three and that would get you through for the whole season. So it's not unprecedented. I think if Ablett was going to be out for 4 weeks, I would be bringing in Thomas personally. He seems like the best pick for me.
I find it amazing.
Go.
Yeah, go ahead, Mo.
I also think that he's probably the least likely of the Collingwood players to be rested because of the 2 week suspension that he had.
Yeah, I find it amazing that you have three midfielders from the same team and you still manage 438 from those three players. But that's just how well Collingwood are doing. So, yeah, I probably like him the most out of the three players, to be honest, considering Selwood has the bye. So that would be my pick of the three if you're looking for a midfield upgrade. Now, we're going to look at Zach Smith now. Like we mentioned, a lot of people are actually riding him in the R2 position right now, which was a result of using Sandilands as a downgrade for a big cash grab. He's tapered off, as you would expect, with a young ruckman playing his first season in the AFL. So 71, 61, and 79 has been his last three scores. Now, obviously, if you're fielding an all-premium slide plus Zach Smith and you're looking for a shake-up, to move up in the rankings, and obviously that'd be a position that you'd be looking to rectify. So we are going to look at three options in the rucks who are premium, and we'll start off with Ben McAvoy, who I brought in a couple of weeks ago for Sunderland's, and he's since scored 141 and 142, and his three games before the bye have actually brought 142, 121, and 135. So he's at absolute sensational form, as has been mentioned many times so far throughout his career. His biggest strength is ability to take a grab. He has awesome hands, and he's probably the best. The highest scoring potential out of all the options that we'll cover for remainder of the year, but he also has the highest price tag. He's $523,000. So if you're looking to upgrade from Zach Smith, that's going to require a fair amount of cash.
Who have you got at R2, Tom?
I swapped out Smith for Jolly last week, and that hasn't been too bad so far. I'm hoping Jolly can play out the rest of the year, but McAvoy, just to get back to him, he's certainly someone that you'd look at. Smith is definitely, of course, you'd have to have the cash to be able to fund the trade, but, I mean, Smith is definitely tapering off. He's had a lot of his games have been played leading the ruck, and it's only natural at the young age. And McAvoy, on the other hand, has sort of learnt under Gardner and King for several years. It seems he's really taken that step into the number one role, and he's doing it beautifully. He's failed to score under 120 in the past 5 weeks, and that's sensational form. Obviously, yeah, he's priced quite highly, but he loves a contested mark. He's actually works really hard around the ground. You see him regularly back and forward, so he's learned to build a tank under his time playing as the second ruck in our side for a few years. And again, he's buy free as well, so he's an option. He's an option on that front as well.
Yeah, I find it surprising. His selection numbers, he's actually only in 16,000 teams, and I'll just bring it up. After round 16, there were only 74 teams in the top 1,000 with Ben McAvoy, which I find absolutely surprising. So he's a great point of difference with very high scoring potential to really move you up the rankings.
Yep, so probably the best pick out of the really high-priced ruckman, I would have thought. The next player we're going to look at is someone that's actually still got a bye in front of... Oh, no, he's just had his bye on the weekend. Sorry, Mark Jamar, who has actually missed some games this year. He's played 8 games for the year after missing 6 in the middle of the season. Melbourne do have a pretty good run home. His scoring hasn't been super this year, but you think that there's a fair chance he'd post a 100 average for the rest of the year, and I think he's priced about 420, 430. So what do you guys think of him?
Yeah, he's a really good option, obviously. I think he's quite capable of averaging 100. And at $422,000, obviously, price would be the major determinant if you're getting him. As we did mention, Ben McAvoy has the highest scoring potential. But in comparison to Shane Mumford, which is the next guy we want to talk about, who's at $408,000, so a similar price bracket, I'm not too sure. I prefer the... I prefer Jamar over Mumford because I think Mumford would probably have a higher score ceiling, but he still does have one bye remaining, which is coming in 2 weeks' time. How do you guys feel about Mumford v. Jamar?
For a league team, I think Mumford is a pretty clear decision. Melbourne do have a really good run home in those last few weeks, but I just think Mumford's scoring potential is that bit higher. He's also missed a few games in the middle of the year from injury and suspension, but should be fresh. But from an overall perspective, I think you'd probably be better off going for a Jamar or a Jolly, who is now buy free as opposed to Mumford.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think from a league perspective, yeah, Mumford's definitely the go. He started fairly well this year, and I mean last year as well. He showed plenty of glimpses that he's been able to score at a very very high level. I think Jamar is the only thing concerning Jamar is whether you think he's able to finish off the year well enough to warrant picking him at that price. Is it? I mean, I'm interested to what you guys think if you're looking at a ruckman like McAvoy, who's just in he's tearing it up with his form, compared to someone who's probably a little more risk. You know, definitely cheaper, but the risk is there in that they might have missed footy or their form might not be as good. Do you pay up for the best of the best, or are you willing to sort of take a step back and maybe save the cash because it might be what your side's after?
Personally, I really like picking the value option. I think it's a lesson that I've learned in the past, and it's just happened several times this year, where if you pick someone at the top of their price cycle, you're expecting them to continue their current run. You're expecting, if you're paying so much for McAvoy, you're expecting him to average 120 plus, and there's a fair chance that he's not going to be able to do that. So Therefore, his output is going to be disappointing compared to what you paid for him. Whereas with someone like a Mumford, who is underpriced, I would say, for what he could average, he doesn't need to actually like go that much better than he is at the moment for you to get value for money there. So as a general rule, I like going for the value if you can. If you've just got the money sitting there, it'd be pretty tempting to go to McAvoy at the moment, though, because he is just that far ahead.
Yeah, I think if it takes an extra trade for you to get that extra cash to go to McAvoy, then definitely don't. But if you have the cash spare, I'd probably just do it, because I'm much more confident in McAvoy's ability to keep scoring than JMR to even maintain 100 to see out the season. So that's probably where I have it. Now, we're going to look at the two more players in the forward line now. The first guy we've talked about a bit, but he's off to buy, and that's Colin Sylvia. 392,000, of course, mid-forward MPP. And he's averaging 97 so far this season, and very easily capable of averaging 105 to run out the rest of the season. And he does have a really good finals run, which is particularly important for those of you going for the league. He has West Coast, Richmond, Gold Coast, and Port Adelaide in the last four rounds, which is obviously great for those of you going for the league win.
Sylvia, I definitely consider him because of the fact that, like you said, he's got no more buys. He does have that dual positioning, which is, you know, always worth considering. I think also the role change that we've seen from him in the last few weeks is him up forward more, and that's pretty simple due to obviously Scully being back in the team, Trengove off suspension a while ago now, but still these midfielders that are sort of gelling together. He seems to be on the outer in that regard and playing more as a forward, because he can do that effectively as well, so I can see the thinking behind it. I think what you have to consider with Sylvia is just looking here. I would consider him, if you do have the trades, to maybe use him as cover, maybe trade him into your midfield, and then use him as a rotational forward. Like you said, he has no buyers, so maybe through the midfield and your forward line, he could slot in as your seventh mid and ninth forward. Curious what you guys think about that, because that's something that could really give you a leg up when you've got players missing each week through the buyers.
It's interesting you actually bring that up, because Mark actually suggested that for my team this week. And I have four more buys to come in. I think two more buys to come in the midfield and four more in the forward line. So he'd actually come on six different occasions, which could net me, you know, if he makes, you know, 25 points off more than my next best bench option, which is Cracker, then, you know, that's 150 points in one trade, which, you know, this late in the season is a fair amount of points to gain.
I think you'd really have to have as many trades as Marcus does left to really consider doing that. I think if you're sort of sitting on 3, 4, 5 trades, you're best off just saving them to direct swap for an injury, I think, rather than to increase your bench cover. But I do like the idea of getting someone like Sylvia that can cover both positions onto your bench if you can. And in Marcus's spot, it would be for Cracker, who it does seem to have faded a bit. I think he's probably going to be subbed at some stage, maybe get a rest. And I'd probably prefer Sylvia a lot in that situation. I'm kind of thinking that against the Bombers, it's now 5 weeks ago, he got a pretty bad corky and got subbed off early in the second quarter, I think it was. And ever since then has been when he's been moved forward and when he probably hasn't been doing quite as much running. So I'm hoping that he's had a week off. It's been 5 weeks. That should be enough for him to really start feeling a bit fitter, and that he might get a bit more run, and they might give him a little bit more time in the midfield. And just the fact that their run in the last 3 weeks is so good, very seriously strongly consider him for a league team, and still consider him for overall as well.
The last player we're going to look at is Leon Davis, who's performed surprisingly well so far this season. He's only owned by 12,000 coaches, and he's priced at 437,000. He scored 101, 87, 113, 116, 104, 92, 106, and 124 in the last few rounds. So that's obviously great scoring from Leon Davis right there. How do you guys see him as a pick?
Davis, I think, again, no buyers is definitely a factor, but he's very unique. He's only owned by somewhat 10 of the top 1,000 teams, and he's actually surprisingly consistent, especially over the last few weeks. you know, he's priced, he's not exactly value for 137K or around that mark. But his last few scores, 92, 106 and 124 coming off that bye, he's showing no signs of slowing down this season as previous years where he's just completely tapered off. So if you are looking for someone in case of maybe a sideways trade, in case of a buy, if you, if you're covering a zero and you need to make that trade, he's not the worst option at all because he does seem to be playing a role in which he's feeling fairly consistent scoring is being produced. So definitely someone to look at if you can afford to, again, because, you know, he's someone who's priced at that stage where you're not really sure if you are willing to spend the money, I guess.
Sure, I think a lot of people are going to be looking at trading up forward this week with Harvey's thumb, where he's probably not going to play this week, but they're not sure whether he's going to miss further weeks than that. But a lot of people are also going to have players like Franklin and Rioli up forward, which could cause them some problems this week with Donut's potential. So in that case, people might be looking at those sideways trades. And I think Leon's consistency this year is really what attracts me. He's had a great Dream Team to Supercoach ratio, 83 Dream Team and 124 Supercoach on the weekend. And pretty much every week he's scored more in Supercoach. And just that consistency running off the halfback. And I know with your team, Tom, you've picked a lot of Collingwood players. And it generally is a good idea to have as many players from the top team as possible. Obviously, there's a lot of chance that Collingwood players are going to be rested in the last 4 or 5 weeks. And he'll probably get his turn, whether it be missing a game or be subbed out, but still looks like a pretty solid pick to me this year.
Yeah, I really like the fact that he is their dedicated man out of defense. I mean, if you look at the output of Maxwell and O'Brien running out from halfback, that's decreased. And even Heath Shaw, you know, he's played more time on the wing as well, because Leon Davis is getting to be that funnel, which is, you know, obviously fantastic for his consistency as well, which has been a major flaw in his Supercoach and fantasy relevance. So, yeah, I really like him as a pick. Obviously, more likely to be achieved in the side swap due to his price, as Tom mentioned. But
I was just going to ask, why you thought so many coaches overlooked him during the preseason? He's very unique, and he definitely, there was all the indications there that he was going to play halfback. There was, you know, a lot of talk during the preseason that that would be his role, and it's extremely attractive from a fantasy sense to see a player at that price who wasn't extremely underperforming the previous year move into a role in which he could improve as a mid-price pick. And I'm just curious as to why so many coaches just overlooked that, because, I mean, I certainly was one to do that, and it just, looking back on it in hindsight, sort of as clear cut as you can get in terms of worth the risk.
Yeah, I think the fact that he basically learnt the role in the preseason, and as much as NAB Cup as you can watch, you're never as confident in a player's ability to actually transfer that into the AFL season. And I think he did miss rounds one and two, so he wasn't actually selected initially. He had to break into the side, and I think, unfortunately, it did take him a while to also grow into that role, because prior to the round seven bye, which, you know, you'd assume people look at him after his first bye, he'd only scored 461, 111, and 65 in his first four rounds. So I think it's probably just a combination of factors that, and a bit of chance perhaps, that a lot of people missed out on him. But moving forward, he certainly looks like an excellent option.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay, so I think that wraps up this week's show. Thanks very much to Tom for coming on, and to Fantasy Football Club. Head over to their website if you want to give that a plug, Tom.
At fantasyfootyclub.com. You can also follow us on Twitter, fantasy_FC. A few things happening over there, so feel free to check it out. And, yeah, thanks a lot for having me, guys. It's been really good. Keep up the great work.
Yeah, I'd want to give a – thanks, Tom, for coming on today. I want to give a shout-out this week to Hondo, regular at your Supercoach coach, who came fifth overall this week, which was a good performance by him. Saw a massive jump in the rankings. Dead Sets and Marcus obviously killing it for us at the moment, and hopefully they can get some good overall rankings. I'll just try and do my best to not suck it up to them.
Cheers. Thanks for the show, guys, and good luck for the upcoming round. Yeah.